Well, hi everyone. Welcome along to our class. And those online, although I can't see you, welcome along to our class. Thank you for being here. So we'll begin as we normally do. We'll take refuge together, we'll say some prayers, then I'll explain the structure of the class, and then we'll do the class itself. So please get comfortable in your seat. Now please, your shoulders relax, your back straight. Have your head rest easy on the neck. And if you like, close your eyes or keep them partially open. And once you've got your posture right, just relax and let your body breathe itself. And feeling the body and breathe itself. Just relax into awareness. And from within the state of a relaxed awareness, imagine that the ground beneath you is a deep blue, flecked with gold and as soft as the palm of a young child's hand. The space above you is filled with rainbows and light. And the air is filled with offerings. And in the space in front of you is a large golden throne. It has cushions of lotus, sun, and moon, and sitting upon the moon cushion is Shakyamuni Buddha. In front of him is His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and on each side of the Dalai Lama is your own teacher, the one you feel most attracted towards and appreciate the kindness deepest. And right beside him is Lama Zopa Rinpoche. Surrounding these four figures are all the deities, Dharma protectors, Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, teachers, and other highly realized awakened beings. Sitting beside you on your left is your mother, and beside you on your right is your father, and behind you are your family and closest friends. In front of you are people who don't like you and other people that you don't like. And all these people are surrounded by many others who are strangers to you in this life. That in past other lives, they've been as close and as dear to you as your own parents. And you think to yourself, how lucky I am to still be alive today, to again have the leisure and opportunity to attain any of your spiritual goals. But you have to act right now. The things do not exist as they seem to. But while things are not quite right, you have met a spiritual friend who is leading you in the safe direction of the three rare sublime ones, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Now, to make your offering of practice purely for the benefit of all sentient beings, see yourself as clear as a deity, holding Vajra and Bal, and experiencing great bliss. From that blissful state, join me in saying, I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened through the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. From the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down. And these dissolve into yourself and all the people surrounding you. And all negative karmas and obstructions are purified, while your health, lifespan, virtue, and Dharma realizations are increased. We're cleansed by wisdom and love. Recollect the four immeasurable thoughts. These four boundless states of love, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And decide to develop these yourself and to establish all beings in those four boundless states. And join me in saying, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that is without suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from the vice of attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. From the heart of each enlightened being, lights and nectar stream down, dissolving into yourself and all beings surrounding you. The negative karmas and obstructions are purified. Your health and lifespan and virtue and Dharma is increased. The feelings pure and yet invigorated, allow yourself to relax. And to accumulate the merit for actualizing the path. Invite the field for doing so. And then the field for accumulating merit appears. You put your hands together at your heart and you say, reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering actual in the mountain. I declare all my negative actions accumulated since the beginning of this time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own and others' merits to the great enlightenment. Now we've created some merit, we have purified negativities and obstructions. And we do not want to cling to this merit as being truly existent. So imagine the universe around us actually transforming to a wonderful pure land. And our body is this pure land. And we're going to offer this to the Buddha and his entourage as a means to accomplish our enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. And so we say, this ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kamdeyataya Hundi. This empty offering is accepted by the Buddhas, who smiles at us with delight. They're looking down at us, he smiles, and we gaze up into his eyes. And looking into the eyes of the Buddha, you find immense humility, kindness, and acceptance. And now your own root guru leaves the merit field and comes to sit above your head on a lotus and moon seat. He puts his hands together in the mudra of prayer and makes a request to the lineage masters that they pour down inspiring blessings upon yourself and all beings around you, that all perverse minds may quickly stop, that all pure minds may quickly be generated, and that the pacification of all outer, inner, and secret obstructions takes place. And from the heart of each holy being, streams of light and nectar flow down, granting blessings and purifying the mind. You recollect the three principal aspects of the path. And from the heart of the Buddha, light rays fill the infinite expanse of space. All beings and environments dissolve into this light and are absorbed by the Buddha along with the merit field. And the Buddha dissolves into your teacher who's above the crown of your head. And your teacher takes on the appearance of the enlightened master Shakyamuni Buddha. And the Buddha begins to become very small and descends through the crown of your head, down through your body, into the space of your heart. His brilliance begins to expand, filling your body and mind with light. Within that sphere of light, you hear the mantra of the Buddha. And hearing that mantra, you join with me and recite it three times, saying, Ayata Om Mahabale Om So go ahead, raise black. Fill the 10 directions of space. And every sentient being abiding within space is utterly transformed into the fully awakened state. We have accomplished the two purposes. Now, light begins to withdraw from the 10 directions of space and re-enter your heart. You can feel yourself breathing. You can feel the seat beneath you, and you can hear different sounds. Feeling embodied, you understand that this is a meditation of imagination which has imprinted the mind with this potential to actually occur. You're recollecting that every goal that you have rests on the tip of a wish. You think, I will become enlightened. I will benefit all sentient beings. This is the purpose of me abiding and listening to these teachings. This is what I wish for. And now breathing deeply through your nostrils Exhale through your mouth and let your eyes flutter open. Bring your awareness to either the screen or to where we're sitting. Okay, so today we're going to sort of go through three aspects of this teaching. One is we're going to look at the nature of the mind, and the nature of the mind is seen to be clarity and cognizance, or clear and knowing. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. And then the relationships that there is between the mind and the person, meaning us. And how the mind itself has these two natures, an ultimate nature and a conventional nature. Well, that's what we'll be covering today. And as we go through, we'll do some meditations, and we'll also open it up for a few minutes of discussion or query. The first thing we're going to look at is this we call our natural state, the mind itself. And here it's calling it the luminous mind. So, like I said, the definition of the mind in the Buddha Dharma is clear and knowing. That's its most common way of speaking about it. So the clear or clarity refers to the nature of the mind. Cognizance or knowing is referring to the function of the mind. So the mind functions as an entity of knowing. And the clarity is telling you it's not something physical. You can't actually see it. You can't touch it. There's no physical characteristics whatsoever. What its purpose is to reflect objects, very much like a mirror or a surface of a pond. And it is empty of any inherent existence. So this is what this word clear means. It's got three meanings: not physical, reflective capacity, empty of inherent existence. And at the very same time, being able to know. So it's much like there are a lot of analogies and metaphors I use to describe this phenomenon called mind. So here we can look at this like crystal clear lake. It reflects everything perfectly. A little bit like this one here in our picture, right? So if you see those great mountains and lakes in Canada and Alaska, you see the mountains that reflected perfectly in the lake surface, don't you? It just looks like, either way, you couldn't really tell if we turned it upside down. Right? So this lake can reflect everything perfectly, but it's never tainted by what it reflects. Right? So even though the mountains look great, you think, oh, it's fantastic. Right? That the reflection has no real impact on the lake. Like the mountain up there, it doesn't have any impact on the lake, does it? Other than it's just being reflected in the lake. That's it. You just see something there. But it doesn't have the hardness of the mountain. It doesn't have the snow of the mountain. There's none of those real characteristics of the actual mountain. Now, sometimes when you look at those lakes and it's so clear, if a breeze comes up and the ripples, touches the water, ripples up, the whole picture is all disturbed, isn't it? You can't really make out now. And when the wind goes away or it dies down, it all becomes clear again. This is not very much like the mind. We've got this clear nature, like that reflective capacity of the lake surface, but it can be disturbed. It's often disturbed by thoughts and conceptions. Thoughts, conceptions, emotions. Then it's clarity. You can't access it. Another metaphor I like is the idea of we go to the movies. We know, even if there's a curtain across it, that screen is blank and it's white. It's always been white. It's always going to be white. But when the movie starts, the whiteness just disappears. We can't see it. But it is white. And that white is not changed by all the colors pushed upon it by the lens of the cameras, right? It just stays white. That's how the mind is. It's got this natural clarity that you can't touch, you can't see, but it's there. And why you really can't see it is because of our thoughts, our emotions. They color it, they hide it. Just like the screen, its nature always remains the same. It's always non-physical. always has the capacity to reflect something, to show something. And it has no intrinsic nature. Doesn't have an objective existence, meaning you can't find it as an objective thing if you try to search for it. This is this phenomenon that we call mind. And it's unalterable. It always stays that way. It is always that way.
Always pure.
Always
Yeah.
clear and always has the ability to know. These things, this is, it just stays the same. That's its function and its nature stay the same. I guess it's so, but this is before I said about how the wind and the ripples that go upon the surface of the lake obscure the reflection of the mountains. Or when we look at the screen and the curtains open up and the light comes on, the whiteness is obscured by the light. When the movie finishes, the screen goes back to white again, doesn't it? Same as when the wind dies down, you can see the mountains and the lake. It's the same with us. The obscurations, the emotions arise, they can never stay. They fall away again. And then the mind's nature is revealed again. Like, for instance, there's no one in here, including myself or anybody else, can remain angry all the time. It's impossible. It can't be done. One of the major reasons for that is because anger is based on a false premise. That doesn't have the strength or the capability of doing that. Yeah. Now, whenever it falls away, what's revealed is awareness, mind. And so you can't have anger without a mind, but you can have a mind that is without anger. And anger, because it depends upon things, is called adventitious. It depends upon its conditions for it to arise. And without those conditions, it does not arise. So we can, the mind can actually be freed from its afflictions and its obscurations. When the camera, when we watch the movie, the screen is obscured by the color and the story and so forth, right? You just have to turn the camera off and hello, right? White again. It's the same with us. So our appearances, the appearances to mind are adventitious. We actually all know this. We've had this experience again and again. You know, anytime we've been really upset, most of us don't stay more, you know, upset for, well, less than an hour usually. It's way less, right? But then, oh, someone says, no. Are you kidding? You do my best. You do your best to hold on to it, do you? That's right. But you have to put effort into that, don't you? There are. Right.
You can.
And if you stop putting effort into it just falls away. So these mental obscurations are temporary. If you give them no energy, no support, they'll naturally fall away. But you can actually remove them yourself. You can actually put effort in and you can remove them too. But either way, you can remove them. They can be removed. Many times they can come back, so they're temporarily removed. But when the conditions come back, they come back. Right? This is very much like sometimes when you go out in the morning, you walk out there, it's a wonderful, pure, open blue sky, right? You look up and go, wow, great day. Pretty good. Then a little bit later, it suddenly becomes overcast. You look up, there's all these clouds up there, right? Can't see the sun, all the blueness is gone, right? It's like, oh. You walk on a little bit more, you go back, go to work, you look out the window, it's all blue again. Just like our mind. Our mind is the same thing. The afflictions are not intrinsic to the nature of the sky. Sky-like mind, right? Just like clouds and things like that, they're not always there. We see that every day. It's the same with us. So the defilements are temporary. mind can be purified. So purification here has two meanings. One, that it doesn't come up for the moment, or else it doesn't come up at all. And so we've done things many times when it doesn't come up in the moment. Like, for instance, if you have an uninvited guest or a guest who is invited and they stay too long, right? And then the mind gets agitated, doesn't it? Like it doesn't like this. They said they were going to do this and they haven't. They're sticking around. So we get a little bit anxious and we don't like it. Right? Then, thank goodness, they decide to leave. And we feel better. Right? It's a common thing. This is just how the normal mind normally works. Certain conditions affect it. When the conditions are removed, the mind goes back to being neutral and okay. If you tell them to get the heck out of your house and move on, right, you make an effort, right? You tell them. A little bit later, you feel fine again. Thank God, thank goodness. Right? This requires a little bit of effort. So he says, so whatever obscures the mind, whatever afflicts it, will always be temporary. It can be removed. Now, how to bring about this removal, or what we call a liberated state? How can I liberate my mind from what obscures it or what troubles it? Well, like I said, there's two major ways you can do this. One is through what they call, or wasn't say three. One is through concentration, one is through wisdom, and the other is putting them both together and applying them together. And so you can do this systematically. We don't often do it systematically, but it's possible to do it systematically. So to do something like that systematically, what you do is you create like a reason. You come up with a reason and you apply the reason and your mind changes. You just keep, every time as you meet the situation, you use the reason. So one of the reasons that Corrie Jackson bought in Montreal, now that's a very good reason. Right? It'll work. So when you see people who are behaving really unskillfully, yeah, the normal thing to do is to say something derogatory about those people. Right? Like idiots. That's what I would normally say. Yeah? Or something much worse. Yeah? You describe their behavior, you go, that's those fellows. Yeah? So that's one way you could talk about people. But another way you could say is, oh, suffering sentient being, suffering person suffering. Yeah? Now, for you to say that, you have to have a reason for saying that, right? You actually understand the person is suffering. So if you can work out why, so they've got no control over themselves, look at them. They're trying to be happy, but look what they're doing. They're creating misery for all the people around them, and they themselves are quite agitated. So you could say this is a state of suffering. So whenever you see it, you remember, oh, okay, I've just got to train myself to look at them now like that. I've just got to make that a habit. But instead of calling them idiots or stupid or something else, you go, poor people, suffering person. Because another one they use is like you say, like this other term they use instead of, like we don't like them because they're behaving this way. We use our reasoning to think about past lives and our all beings have been our parents and have been kind to us and that. So then we see them as our parents. So we have a different response to their suffering. Instead of killing ants and flying creatures, we go, I know this creature is once my mother. Gave birth to me, cared for me, and I'm not going to kill it. So we use reasoning to stop these negative emotions arising and obscuring the mind. Yes, Michelle.
I started by just thinking about, say, wild animals, that no wild animal is ever aggressive unless it's frightened. And so
Frightened people.
they look terrifying, but actually they're terrifying. And then once you get that, then you can extrapolate it out to human beings too. No one's ever aggressive unless they're suffering.
They're frightened in some way. So this normally the case is that the person's fearful in some way, they become afraid. And to protect themselves, they lash out. So what we're looking at here is a mental transformation. We're removing one way of thinking and replacing it with another. That's what we're basically doing. And what we're doing is we're replacing it with the truth as it's understood through the lens of Buddhism or the teachings of the Buddha. So you'll know, no one, very few people will go, "Oh, my poor suffering mother looking at an ant," right? People don't do that.
Or a politician.
Or a politician, right? And go, "Oh, poor Trump. You know, he must have done so many great things in the past to be generous and to have this rebirth as a human being." That's the first thing you've got to acknowledge, right? Virtue got him here and generosity gave him his wealth. But look what he's doing now, the poor fellow. Not likely he's going to get another rebirth as a human next time. So you can develop some empathy and sympathy for him. Like he doesn't know, right? He doesn't know what the actual causes were that brought him here, that why he's got the wealth, why he's got the power. That all comes from virtue. But the behavior from it is not, his prison yet is not, right? Well, this would depend. So whether he is or not, you could see him as an enlightened being, which would be what you would do from the tantric point of view. Right? From the ordinary human point of view, you might see him as a very disturbed individual, or he's terrific. That's right. But that's not the view of ordinary people, right? So again, but this is the wonderful thing about the Buddha Dharma. It's about the view. But the view is imbued with wisdom. Okay, so the person, yeah, so the person who sees them as an enlightened being, they have to see themselves as enlightened beings, right? Like I said, it's tantric vehicle, right? You have to see yourself as an enlightened being. Therefore, every other person you're engaging is an enlightened being. This you're involved in the enlightened realm right now. You're not a sentient being. You can't look at it from the point of view of a sentient being. And there are no afflictions taking place because you're enlightened. And the man we call Trump is enlightened too.
And from a sutra point of view, then you see him as a suffering being.
Yeah, that's right. But from the sutra point of view, we see him as a being who's afflicted, has all these emotions, causing himself great distress and others too. That's right, like all the rest of us.
But more tragic because we obviously having put in so much work in a previous life to have so much wealth and power now, and then is it
Blow
all up against the wall?
it. Yeah,
Like,
that's right. Yeah,
that's a
and
tragedy.
again, it's because of the wrong view that he has in this life. And so you look at it and go, this view is probably materialism, materialistic view. And so there's going to be one life, and everything that's happened is because of him. What he's done, he's created this life for himself. Yeah, well, then you do see everybody else as an enlightened being too, and yourself.
It's easy.
Well, it's easy to, but like I said, if you see him as an enlightened being, you better see everybody as an enlightened being and yourself too. Otherwise, it's not really based on wisdom. There's no wisdom, it's just a view, just an idea. So it's got to be found in this thing of how phenomena exist. If it's like that and it's firm, great, that's what they're meant to be doing. If it's not, then you can take other views, and normal other views. Either sutra in terms of this person is a sentient being who's suffering terribly, or you need to appreciate that and not hurt him anymore. Or from a bodhisattva vehicle, you can go as my teacher. You know, actually that goes right to the sutra vehicle too. So okay, how can I look at Trump as a teacher? And one thing he might say is, tell me what not to do.
Is that why it's important to differentiate between the person and their actions?
Differently. Yeah, versus not their action. Yeah, so this state of liberation, because the mind is naturally free from the disturbing emotions, it's always been free from them. We're natural. There's a state of liberation that can be achieved, recognized. And this is possible because of what we call a clear light nature of mind. Being not inherently existent, being not physical, They just haven't the capacity of reflection. But the reflections don't do anything actually to the water. They don't do anything to the sky. The movies that are projected on the screen don't do anything to the screen. It's the same with us. It's the same with mind. That's how it works. Another quote from the Buddha. The mind is devoid of mind. In other words, the mind has no mind. The mind is empty of mind. For the nature of mind is clear light. So I like this quote, like, because it's really looks like a Zen koan, is it? What the heck are they saying here? Right? So you get really great explanations of this when you different masters. But basically it's saying that when we search for an inherently existent mind, we don't find one. You don't find a phenomenon called mind that objectively exists. You go, oh, that's it. It can be realized, it can be experienced, because of what pointed out. And yet, while you can't point it out, the clear light nature remains. I mean, the thing with light here, what it actually means is emptiness. That's the closest we can get to. The Buddhists, oftentimes they use light for the emptiness.
Okay.
Yeah, and so you do see it. Huh?
Do you see it?
No, you do see it, but not with your eyes. You see it perception, right? The perceptual realization of everything is called the path of seeing. You see that all phenomena have no inherent existence.
Because you can't, like when the sun rises, you can't see the light in the space. You can look at the sun, like the source of the light, but you can't actually see light. You just see what it illuminates.
Like the clouds, you see the colour.
Or you see, you know, that spaciousness in between the hills, and it's all clear, and like after rain.
Like what's there is what's not there.
Yeah, so another thing is like the emptiness is what they call a non-affirming negation. Right? So it's nothing, it's not something positive. So what's the closest thing to this phenomenon called emptiness? It's called space. Because space is a space is saying there is nothing, physical within it. It's just the absence of all physical phenomena. That's space.
But often if we say space, we think dark, outer space. So light's kind of better, isn't it, in a way?
Space is very good too. It's like the difference between Gary and I. That's the space, right? There's nothing there. But there's a phenomenon called space. There's nothing physical between Gary and I. So this nothing is like, when we talk about emptiness, the nothing of inherent existence. No thing called inherent existence. That is not there. Just like between Gary and I, there's no physical phenomena. The space exists. You know, we say I can see space, but actually you don't. Space is not a physical phenomenon. That's right. There are many things within the space, but they're not obstructed the fact that I can see Gary.
Air there because of space?
Yeah, without space, there's no air. Air can't, you know. Like they often say, space is the container of all phenomena. When you go down through the elements, there's space, but then there's the last one is awareness. Put all these two together, last one is awareness. So we're just going through what's interesting. Yeah. So another metaphor we can use is the idea of, sometimes when you go into the house or the bathroom in particular, right? After you've had a shower, what happens is the mirrors get, this condensation forms on the mirror. And so you can't see your face clearly in the mirror. So what do you have to do? You have to wipe it out. And then your face is seen. Right? Now, if the condensation was like part of the mirror, you couldn't remove it. This is what the mind is like, right? And the afflictions. The afflictions are like the condensation. You have to remove them. And then you see clearly. And so what you can see clearly, there are two things. You can either what they call see the mind. So here what we mean by that is the conventional nature of mind. It's this could be sort of known to you. You know, it's not a physical object. So, for instance, what I like to do, and you can do this too, is Holiness has said, you know, like he's, when he talks about this, he goes, a real simple way of doing this and how he does it, he's got a statue and it's been tarnished. So there's a part on the statue which has been sort of like worn away and it's a little dull. So he focuses on that part. And what you end up seeing is not that, but your own mind. You can do this yourself, right? So I do this, but I do this, like, I just close my eyes like that. So if you close your eyes like I am, what appears to you? Like your eyes are closed, right? So you're not seeing with your eyes, right? But there's something appearing. So what's appearing to you? Okay, perhaps colours? What are the colours?
All of the colours.
So Miffy's all colours? Okay, so these things, right? So what you can do is take one of those colours and look into it. Focus on that one colour, not just like there, just, you know, relax, but put a bit of effort into it. Like, what is that? And what will happen is it'll vanish. And what you're going to, you get something else, right? It's mind. What you see, what appears to you is your mind. It's a conventional mind. Your own mind will appear without all that colour. Right? This can happen to you. You can have this type of experience. That's your mind. Right? That's the conventional nature of your mind. So as Holiness says, that's not such a big deal. Well, I'll tell you, when it happens, you get a bit of a shock. Right? So Jesus, like, what is that? You go, you open it, it's all here, you go, that's the mind. Right? Now you can question, because it still seems like there's a me and I'm looking at something. It's like an object, right? There's me looking at the object called mind. Mind doesn't have any objectivity. So now it's appearing to you as if it has an intrinsic existence. It's an object. Yeah, it doesn't have an objective existence. Then you can apply your analysis of it to find its empty nature. And then what's going to happen is going to be quite different again. But there's your object. You have to have an object. It has to appear to you to have intrinsic nature. Well, it's your mind. It has that intrinsic nature. It's appearing. Now, analyze. So you get both. And again, it's like the thing about, so it'll vanish, right? This clarity, but that's what it's like. In many ways, I found it's like, to me, it's like being underwater and just opening up your eyes. It's all clear. It's just like, wow, where did everything go? You're aware, just like this. You're aware, there's something there. But just like this, you're aware, it's all there. Close your eyes, something else, it's all there. What are you seeing with? Yeah, your mind. That's right. And the mind is obscured by all these colours. You go, well, I'll look into the colour. Let's see what's in there. Well, you know, it's like looking into the colour on the screen, right? You've got to find the screen in the natural mind. There's going to still look like you're still seeing this phenomenon. It's just that no colours, it's just clean. Right? And it's like you're wide awake. It's quite strange. You know, like it's like, I don't know what the blind see, but this is, it's like to you're seeing with your mind. It's not your eyes. So this comes up and now you have this thing, like, wow, that's the mind. Far out, I've got it. And you have to breathe, relax, so it doesn't just vanish. But hold on to it now. Try to apply your analysis. So the analysis often they use in Mahamudra, you would ask, is it still? Is it moving? There's quite different ways how you do the analysis. You could use the Galupa method of, is it one thing or is it many things? Or you could ask, is it still? Is it new? There's different ways you can do this. Find the way that suits your disposition. Go for it. So just like I said with a bathroom mirror, right? You clear the condensation off, there's the mirror. This ability to look into it, that's the clearing. You clear it like that. You're going deeper and there's the mirror. There's your mind.
There's a question. Does the mind have a voice, or is the voice we hear actual dependent phenomena?
It's all dependent phenomena. Whatever the phenomena is, it's dependent. that's the bottom line. It's dependent and empty. There's never, even like I said, the mind seems, when you see, have this experience, it looks like it's not dependent upon you. It looks like you're looking at it. It's like the mirror, right? You're looking at this other object. It's the same here. But it's not existing like that. You know, so once if you have some sort of experience like this, then you can see what they mean by Dzogchen and Mahamudra, that all appearances are merely mind. And you don't have to buy into it. You don't have to grasp it. You don't have, you know, like you have the actual experience of knowing, oh my God, everything that's thrown up is coming out of this. So they can actually relax. And there's just this matter of how can I relax into the nature of my own mind? So our way of normalizing is to go to sleep, right? That's what we do. But then we can become unconscious. We lose the awareness. There is one there, but it's dull, right? And then we misapprehend it all.
So we have less discursive thought and we relax, but we just go too far and go unconscious.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then all the appearances, then they come back to us and they look all real again. And then we get frightened in our dreams, or we really like them, because we approach it as if that's the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes you realize this could be a dream. Well, and if you do that, then it changes again. That's, yeah, it's different. Anyway, dude, Paul gets really interested talking about this new meditation. Please just get comfortable in the seat. Let your body relax. Drop your shoulders. Close your eyes. Put your hands where you want to. And just let your body breathe itself. And with each exhalation, just let go of tension. Make your exhalations a little bit longer than your in-breath. And on the in-breath, just invite a sense of calmness. Out breath, relax. I'm trying to imagine your mind as a sunlit sky. Naturally luminous. And peaceful freedom. Now imagine now that your awareness moves like a camera lens. It comes down from the sky, coming down to the ground, and seeing a pond of water. The surface is covered by fallen leaves. These leaves, we know, can be removed from the pond, from the surface of the water. In the same way, thoughts, emotions, and distractions are merely on the surface of awareness. If the leaves were removed from the surface of the pond, the surface would reflect the pristine, sunlit sky. Just as the water can mirror the vastness of the sky, similarly, when we remove the clouds of emotions, the clouds of distraction, the vastness and the simplicity of the mind is revealed. Even just breathing normally and naturally and having no emotions, no thoughts, no disturbances arising in the mind, you already have a glimpse into its nature. Just breathe in through nostrils and exhale. So I was going to say, you know, so many times when you do mindfulness meditations, they ask you to focus on your breath. Do you notice anything else when you do that?
State of your mind.
The state of your mind. That's right. Your awareness becomes obvious to you. The breath is, in a way, just a trick and anchoring. And then you see this vast stillness. That's what you want to get at, is that. And if you relax more and more, but your attention becomes more vivid, then its vividness actually appears to you. So now let's look at our next topic. We're now going to talk about mind, body, and what's beyond. So in the Sutra Vehicle, which is what we're basically talking about here, we talk about how the mind is a material phenomenon. It's a physical, the body is a material phenomenon. It's called form when we talk about the five aggregates. It's solid, atomic in nature, color, all those sort of characteristics, right? But the mind is not like that. It's not material. It's called immaterial, not material. It doesn't have color, shape, weight, anything like the body does. So they're two different phenomena. Yet they influence each other, as we know. But something happens to the body, something happens to our mind. Many times the things that you think about can have a direct influence on your health and on your body. There's a relationship there. One is not the same as the other, but they are interrelated. They affect one another. How that takes place has been very difficult to explain. But from our own experience, we know it takes place. So at the time of conception, the physical elements from our parents merge with the continuity of an immaterial mind, and this forms a new life. Now, this is the Buddhist Sutra presentation, but with aspects of the Tantra. So when you sort of get a little bit of knowledge of the Tantra, you say, okay, so we've got these gross physical elements from mum and dad, right? And now this new thing comes along called mind. And it's going to have this relationship, and so suddenly becomes like a life. Because before that takes place, it's just physical phenomena. There's no life there. That is what we just said, blood and sperm. Right? There's no living being in either of them. But when they come together, something else comes with it. Sometimes, not all the time, but many times. And this thing is called mind, awareness. Now, one question could arise and go, well, how does this relationship take place? The Tantra, this is where it's explained in Tantra. Ayashoka Tantra, this is where it's explained, right? They're saying it's not just mind. This movement is energy, and that's the most subtle physical phenomena. And it's that that relates with the gross phenomena. Yeah? And because mind is a single entity with that. Now we have this phenomenon called a person. When we call the person, this thing's going to start changing, isn't it? Right? This thing that had no life, no living entity called blood, sperm, they're not living things. Right? They come together, something else comes. Continuum of mind. If the necessary if the conditions are there, we call karma. If that's there between these things, off we go. Now a new life can start taking place. Now we can ask ourselves, like we say, that is the person the body? We go, no. Is the person the mind? No. What's the person then? So, well, the person is the name given to this combination of a body and a mind. So the body is all the physical stuff from mum and dad. But there's this other thing there called mind. So mind itself is not the person. The body is not the person. But when you put them together, now it's called a person. In its gross form, right? That's going to be called a baby person. It comes out as an infant person, and then there's a child person, and all the way up to, here we are, adult persons. So the body is seen to be like the boat, and the 12 links is a picture there of when these things come together. That's the boat, and the mind is the captain of this boat. And we have this activity going on, isn't it? Like the boat goes here, the boat goes there. What's steering the boat? Yeah, well, the captain.
And the captain's drunk.
That's right. The captain is drunk, as Mary Cullen said. Everybody knows. That's right.
That's an existential joke.
So then we can talk about the self, right? Like, how does it, like, well, I'll add a bit more to my class, to our class, right? One thing is, how does it actually exist? And how is it misapprehended to exist? Right, so that all the problems arise. So the self exists like a rainbow. Like rainbows, you can see them, right? They exist out there, don't they? We can see them with our eyes, but you can't touch them. They don't have any physical reality. Right? So the self is like that.
But there is gold at the end.
I hope so. And I hope we're going to find it today. So, like I said, but there are many characteristics to the rainbow. But like, if you try to grab it or hold on to it, and just like you said, so where you are in relation to the rainbow, it changes.
Yeah.
Right? This is like us, right? So when we have particular experiences, we change. And now the rainbow that's appearing to us is like the body. That's the form. We have the form of the rainbow with all its colors. We have this form. You can't actually touch or find the rainbow. You can touch and find this, right? But the self that's attributed, you can't. It's not there. This self, but experiences things though, right? It feels stuff. So when all the necessary conditions come together, there's like a self that's becomes all real to us. The feeling self. The thinking self. How does it exist though? Like in mere name. It's the name given to the body and the mind when they're alive and functioning. It's called the self of the person. The person. Where do we get into all the trouble? When we think we're more than that, and we often think we are more than just the name self. But what happens is this name self is given to the body and mind, and our ignorance grabs that name and makes it to be more than a name. It makes it our body, or it makes it our mind, or it makes it a combination of them, or something completely different, but substantial and real. But it's not a name. And we act as if we're more than the name given to our body and mind. So it's not giving a rainbow solidity, but giving it a nature that it doesn't actually have. I mean, we do that, don't we? Like Ian said, and at the bottom of every rainbow is a pot of gold.
That's
right. There's something there. That's right. We're going to go again. No, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And, yeah, we don't find our own pot of gold. Yeah, so the self, and why is that? Because the self exists dependently, and the dependently here is upon imputation. It's a mere name. It depends upon the designation name. That's why it's not there as any real thing. And its conventional existence is that we're not separate from the body and mind. Because if we were, something could happen to our body and mind, it would affect us. Or something could happen to us, but doesn't affect our body and mind. So we're not separate. But we're not the same either. We're not physical, we're not mental. We exist as this name. It's given to this combination when it comes together. That's how we exist. In fact, all things exist like that. As dependent designations. So that's how it is, right? So this is how the self is, but it's also how the mind is. It's how everything is. So as we know, so this mind that we have, which is without intrinsic nature, this is one of the meanings of clear. It is clear of any intrinsic nature. No intrinsic nature there. Reflective capacity and knowing. That's how it exists. The conventional way of its existence, everything exists conventionally. There isn't anything that exists ultimately. The only way the mind can exist is conventionally. Our mistake often is to think that we exist ultimately or the phenomena do. In this case, the mind. So knowing this, again, this introduces us what they call like this, the nature of the Buddha. And the nature of the Buddha is to be empty of any intrinsic nature. In fact, in Nagarjuna's great text, when he looks at the selflessness of the person, he uses the selflessness of Buddha. And so the Buddha has no intrinsic existence. If you know that, then you go, no, neither do I, right? So he takes the highest evolved state that we could ever accomplish, Buddhahood, and examines it to see if it has an intrinsic nature. Because it doesn't, we can become a Buddha. Because Buddha dependently exists. So here again, you might be thinking of Buddha as a person, but Buddha is mind. It's the awakened mind. It's just the mind that is free from all the garbage you've overlaid upon it and thought was real. That's all it is, just the realization of that. And so it's as if like our mind is like a diamond stuck in mud. But all it requires is the mud to be removed and the diamonds are right there. It's always been there. It's always been clear. It's always been valuable. It's that way. And the point of practice and engaging in the spiritual path is to discover that. If we discover it, it's called awakening. And sometimes, depending upon the Buddhist tradition, even a glimpse of it is seen to be an awakening. And then the thing is, you need to get, have a bit more of a glimpse, do it more often. So the brilliance of the Dharma, like it's always there. This is the potential that is always there. So natural potential of the mind is to know things. That's what it does. It's never been a solid entity. It's never been an objective thing. And how does it get to know it? Because it's reflective capacity. It's like until you put an object in front of the mirror, all you get is just the clarity of the mirror, isn't it? You have to come in from the side, of course. You sort of see and go, what's in the mirror? You go, nothing. But you put something in front of it, now it appears in the mirror. You just move it away, it goes back to what it was, and you put something else, and more and more stuff. But it makes no difference. The nature of the mirror stays the same. But this is the nature of our mind. It always stays the same. Its deepest nature, it doesn't change. So you hear things like in the text, the changeless nature. The nature that does not change. This is its intrinsic empty nature. Then another quote, this is, I think, from the Dhammapada, he says, you know, the world is led by mind and drawn along by mind. All phenomena are controlled by one phenomenon, mind. Yeah. Without a mind, you cannot say whether a thing exists or not. Without awareness being involved, there's no way to say anything about the phenomenon. So this quote sort of encapsulates the central role of the mind in shaping our experiences and reality itself. It emphasizes that our mental states, attitudes, and perceptions profoundly influence our lives and the world around us. As a metaphor, you think of like the mind as being like a skilled conductor. It orchestrates the symphony of our experiences and perceptions. You know, if you just sort of think about like the mind that we've got and the senses that we've got, then you think of the blind or the deaf. They still have awareness, but some of their awareness has been altered in some way. Their world is completely different.
It's got a different orchestra.
Yeah, different orchestra, different music. But still the experiential thing, right? Their world is like this. So like you say, you know, some people, their consciousness is so effective, you end up in a mental institution. Others wish to stop their awareness functioning at all, so they want to kill themselves. But all, you know, you can see my awareness leads into some, you know, decision. And most of the time, just never seen that it's awareness itself. You know, like you'd say when this is happening, I'm going mad, right? You think it's me. And that's not you. It's awareness. You know, is madness the intrinsic nature of mind? You go, no. Understanding this mind-body connection and emptiness, right? Always remember that whatever the phenomena are, they always dependently arise at phenomena, which means they're empty of any intrinsic nature. It's always dependent. And like I said, the most important of them all is the dependency of awareness itself and language. And so the language reifies the appearances. Suddenly they become much more real than they actually are, and they always seem to not be of the nature of mind itself, that there's something else. Right? Just like I said with the name I. Right? But just the language itself and the way, and now it falsely appears to us. To understand that this mind-body connection and emptiness is like learning to see a mirage in the desert for what it truly is. It's not water, but it's an illusion caused by the conditions, just like the rainbow one. Recognizing this does not remove the mirage, but it stops us from chasing after it. We do see the rainbow, but there's no gold there. One time in New Zealand, so I used to work in forest products with these big trucks we used to go to work in. And one end of the rainbow going right over the road, and we were driving, we came to drive through it, and the rainbow stopped on the paddock. So I've never seen this, it's like the pot of gold, right? And I'm going, no pot of gold, right? But we stopped. I'm going to have a look because I've never seen this. Because the grass itself was cold. The light, it came, was stopped there, you know? And I'm looking at it going, gee, the light's got yellow and it's pink. And so I stepped out and put my hand there, and it was like, you know, the light comes on your hand, that color. It's a new thing. But my eyes was like, no gold. I know, and that's right. Yeah, I'm sure. Okay, let's do another meditation. We're just going to let ourselves settle into the present moment. We do this just by getting comfortable, closing the eyes, and letting the body breathe itself. We then decide that we want to develop greater compassion and wisdom. And this is cultivated easier by understanding the nature of reality. I think I want to discover the nature of reality and develop wisdom and compassion, both benefit myself and others. So now again, just recognize the deep connection between your body and your mind. This deep connection shapes how we perceive the world. Like there are a number of women in this room, having a woman's body and the mind influences how you perceive the world. Just in the same way, there are a number of men here. We have the body of a male. We have this phenomenon called mind. They come together, we see the world a little differently than you. So the interplay between body and mind is not fixed, but arises dependently. But acknowledging that truth, through that acknowledgement, we can actually realize that suffering does not stem from life itself, but from the attachment and misconceptions that we bring to life. Having that insight could inspire you to seek a liberation from your own suffering. So metaphorically, understand this is like seeing a mirage in the desert, recognizing it as an illusion. There's no water, no trees, no fruit there. Frees us from chasing water, shade, and fruit, even while the mirage stays visible. So ask yourself, what sort of attachments cloud your own perception? And how does holding on to those attachments shape your experience? What would it feel like to let go? And we just have to carry that awareness that is free from clinging. Come to the rest of the evening and if possible into the morrow. And breathe in deeply through your nostrils and exhale. Okay, so then our last little section, we're going to look at the mind's fundamental nature. So what we mean by fundamental nature basically is its emptiness, its deepest nature. So like I said, the mind's conventional nature is this clarity, non-physicalness, ability to reflect, and to know. That's its conventionality. It's ultimately free of any intrinsic nature. And these two things, they always go together. Whatever dependently arises is empty. Basically, like a river continuing on through ages, So the mind's clarity and cognizance form its conventional and ultimate nature. And the mind is often seen as like a river or a stream. And so other things is like an ocean. Plenty of different metaphors. So where's ocean stream? It's like a continuum of water going somewhere. So we have this continuum of lives, and it's the awareness that the thing called life is imputed to. We have what's called a clear light mind. So this is called the subtlest level of consciousness. It's called clear light mind. And it emerges when the grosser levels of mental activity dissolve. But this is often in the death state. When you go through the death state, you'll come down to a state called the clear light mind. And what it means there is that the grosser levels of mind are not there. It's not that, oh, now I get a glimpse of emptiness. That's not what's meaning here. Although oftentimes clear light can mean emptiness. Well, it just means a mind where the grosser levels are not there. So just last a tiny moment and you don't recognize it. Most people don't recognize it when they come out. Why Buddhists want to know about it, especially people who are practicing the Tantra, they realize that clear light mind, it's like space, right? That's like emptiness. And what they call, you try and get your awareness and merge with that and stay right there. Your wisdom merges with this. Your understanding of emptiness goes, that's it, I've got to stay there. It's called the meeting of the mother and the son. So like the son is our effort. We are the child trying to meet the mother. The mother is emptiness. Because all phenomena are empty. They all come from emptiness. So the practice is to have that and join and stay there for as long as you can. If you can do that, you have, that's the enlightened mind. Right? That takes place, you, that's the mind of enlightenment.
So the clear light mind continue into the Vado?
It's all, from this perspective, it's now, it's sort of lost, now it's back into appearances. Yeah, so when you don't recognize, it's like, we're in the theatre, you know, you get a glimpse of the white screen and it's all coloured again and now we're off. We're in the movie. And we don't see it, we forget. And we're meant to forget.
Right? When you wake up.
And so this clear light mind, it is the creator of samsara or enlightenment. If you don't recognize it, it's samsara. You forget, it all takes on its objective existence, you buy in, you're lost. If you can recognize it, you're free. Yeah, ignorance creates samsara. And wisdom just recognizes what you've always been. It doesn't create anything, it's just knowledge, awareness, realization, you know, all those sort of words they use. You know, like coming home. Come back to what you always were. So our rebirth continues our journey through the inference of karma. Now, just as you see, when we go into the Bardo state, like we've missed our chance, we didn't see it. However, through tantric techniques, you can turn the Bardo state into the state of awakening. There are the three distinct stages where you can still bring about your enlightenment. And that's the purpose of practicing what they call the three kayas. You take death, intermediate state, and rebirth. Each of them you have a chance. The chances are diminishing as you're getting closer to rebirth. And if you don't recognize any of them, well, you're reborn. Normally as a normal human being. But other than that, you can go, use your practice to go, yes, I'm going to take rebirth, but it's to benefit others. So you're not swept aside by the winds of karma. It's prayer. It's your aspiration that drives you. It's a very different experience again. And all this is possible because of the phenomenon we call Buddha nature, which is just the deepest nature of our mind. It's the same nature of the Buddha. That's why you often read in text, there's no difference between a Buddha and a sentient being. Well, there is. But the only difference is the Buddha recognizes the nature of the mind, and we don't. That's why we often see that sentient beings are actually Buddhas who don't know it. You know, this what in the Dzogchen texts, that's what they'll often say. And in many ways, you can't take that literally, right? It's sort of, if you took that literally, it's saying, well, because I have the potential to be, like, I am a mother. And why? Because I have the potential to be one. So it's the same as like, yeah, I am a Buddha. Why? Because I've got the potential to be one. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, right? So from a reason perspective, you'd go, no. But from another perspective, you can go, wow, that's really great to hear. So the self, because of course the Buddha, you know, he can talk about himself. But when he talked about himself, he was talking about like correctly, right? Conventionally. Not intrinsically or inherently or grasping it. So like the self exists through designation. It doesn't exist through an independent way of existing. This, you know, like I said, for me, it's kind of simple. Well, it does become simpler as you become more familiar talking about and sharing it with others and reading about it. It does. You know, because you just sort of go, okay, if I exist independently, that means I don't depend upon a body. That means I don't depend upon my mind. That means there's something called self. There's not those two, but I can have all these experiences. Because that's what independent means, not dependent upon. You know, and the Buddhists go, well, that's the big mistake. So does this mean self does not exist? So many times you'll see people talk, now the self doesn't exist, you know, and you would go, hang on a minute. Especially if you're a Buddhist, right? You have to be, from our perspective, if you've studied enough, you go, it's not a problem. Because when they say self doesn't exist, I know they mean self does not intrinsically exist. Independently, because I know that. I go, yep, that's right. No problem. You also know that you exist right there. You're listening. So, of course, you exist. Yeah. So that exists in the false way, exists in the correct way. So the Buddha can say and talk about all these different types of experiences. So again, this nature, the Buddha nature is like luminous, but it's defiled by the adventitious defilements. In the text on Buddha nature, he says like a diamond in the mud, a Buddha statue wrapped in clothed in dirty clothing. It's like honey inside the hive, which all the bees are swarming around. You know, they give you, I think there's 9 analogies or so, where you read it, oh, that's how the deepest nature of it is. It's actually okay. No, I'm actually okay. So the quote suggests that our fundamental nature is clear and aware, yet often obscured by afflictive emotions and ignorance. And this understanding forms the basis for spiritual transformation. No time for being interesting. No, simply put, like I like this, you know, it's like the mind is, like I said, simple and early, it's like a mirror. Dirt and all that stuff, just take off the mirror. It just always retains its clarity, its ability to reflect. That's just like the mind. Last meditation. Again, just get comfortable. Let your body breathe itself. And consider the purpose of the meditation. Explore the nature of the mind, its clarity, potential, and innate freedom. So I want you to actually think something. Sitting there, just think anything. Okay, now stop. Think about the sounds outside. Now stop. Think about how your bottom feels on the seat. Did you notice that when you thought about one thing, the other thing could not appear? So many of these many thoughts come up and feelings, you just observe them with impartiality. You know it's possible to change them just by putting your awareness somewhere else. It's as simple as that. So if you ask why is that? It just goes, it's the nature of my mind. It's just like when I throw things up, when I put things up in front of the mirror, it's reflective. When I move it away, it's not. Now, do these appearances define you? When you hold a rag doll up in front of a mirror, does that define the mirror? When your dog is standing in front of the mirror barking at its own reflection, does that define the mirror? When you dress up in good clothing and you stand in front of the mirror, does that define the mirror? When you make your face up or comb your hair, does that define the mirror in any way? It's the same with your own inner reflections, your own thoughts, your own appearances. They do not define you. They're not you. So what happened if you remember that and thought, none of these appearances are me? I don't need to hold on to them. You'd be free, naturally free. You are always free. Now breathe in now. Exhale, let your eyes come open. So our takeaways today is like, just try and catch yourself with the act of thinking, and you don't have to go along with it. Anytime you think it's not you, it's just a thought. You hold on, you'll think it's you. This is how it works.
Actually, Eddie, there was an unconventional cure for depression, which is to just walk around for one day with a stone in your shoe. And
Ah,
it's
that's right.
like that meditation. You just can't focus on anything else. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you won't be depressed,
And
but you
then
have a
you get the
sore foot.
relief of that's like when you take the shoe off, then you've got the whole relief experience as well. And it's complete,
Yeah.
yeah, reboot.
So here we go. So catch yourself with the act of thinking and realize you have to decide, do you want to think that or not? If you do, it's going to have an effect on you. So be like a thought detective. Understand what negative thoughts are. Know that do you want to actually feel that and become negative? If you do, like hold on. If you don't, move your attention. The simplest way is just move your attention somewhere else. You cannot have the two things in mind at the same time. It's impossible. And then try to pick one positive habit, whether it be mental or physical or verbal, and practice it each day. Yeah, I think many of us are so familiar with saying thank you. Right? So we got taught to say that. Right? And we do it naturally now.
Well, Queenslanders are famous for saying thank you to the bus driver. Because you can tell a Queenslander in any other state in Australia because they're the only ones that say thank you to the bus driver.
I've always said I'm from not from Australia or Victoria, but grew up in Victoria, and I've always said maybe I've just always had this
I think
spirit.
you're a weirdo in Victoria.
Yeah,
emigrated in 65 to Queensland, and we lived in a migrant hostel, and there was a family of children who'd been there for some months, some years. They were Aussies. They get on the bus leaving, thanks, Desi, and then all the newcomers, like, could we've never done that? And then we're like, okay, that's being Australian. Thanks, Desi. Yeah, and so all the new ones that they come, that's how you became an Aussie.
Yeah, so just like that, we can do this, we can do that so easy with speech, right? And then we can do it with our own bodies, then we restrain ourselves from harming. We might get up in the morning and make the first thing you like a cup of tea. But it's just through training, isn't it? We don't even call it training. We just habituate ourselves to this because it's good. Right? Then it's the same with the mind. Find something good that you can do with your mind. Doesn't have to be a big thing, but something that you can still do easily and do it again and again and again so it becomes a habit. Then find the next simple thing. do it again and again and again. Because this is how the mind works. What you familiarize it with, that's what's going to do. So let's come to the end of our class for today. But next, we're going to look at these Four Noble Truths. The rest is just about approaching the Buddhist path. So the foundation of all Buddha Dharma is these Four Noble Truths, according to this holiness. Next week, we'll do that. So thank you, those online and those people here. Let's dedicate our merit, our energy in this class to this goal. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme dual bodhicitta not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline but increase forevermore. And as long as space endures, as long as sentient beings abide, may I turn the main to the spell of sorrows of the world. In for His Holiness. The wish-granting, wish-fulfilling jewel, source of every single benefit and happiness in this world, through the incomparably kind Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be spontaneously fulfilled. And then for the quick return of the person who we won't be calling Lavazoka, but who was once Lavazoka, because everything exists in mere name. In holding and spreading the movies, precious and complete teachings through explanation and practice, you wore the armor of patience that has never discouraged. Incomparable, venerable Guru, to your make this request.